Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on our first podcast of what's hopefully many. This is our first one, so if it is the worst podcast you've ever heard, we do apologize. Our plan here is to just cover our blog topics for the week, what we've talked about, some of the news in the industry, tips that we have for small businesses as far as online marketing goes, and hopefully we can give you some ideas and share some of the recent news with you. So I believe Donnie's going to start this week with his topics.
We have a little rule at Protocol 80, and if you miss your blog day, you have to write two blog posts the next day. And I was fortunate enough last week to miss two blog days. So this week, I got to write four posts. I may have done five. I don't remember. But anyways, I started the week off by continuing my series on using Facebook for your small business. And in my past posts, there was four of them before this week, I had talked about setting up your business page, adding custom tabs, things like that. But this time I kind of wanted to focus on actual case studies of businesses that have set up a Facebook business page and actually had success with it or failed with it, and some of the things that they actually did. So the first case study that I focused on was Ace Hardware, and they're a pretty familiar brand. And I also did another case study later in the week on a business that isn't as large as Ace Hardware, because I know many of our clients and our prospects are small businesses. But the tactics that Ace Hardware employed were nothing that a small business can't afford or do. And really, the key to their success was having a strategy up front and knowing exactly what they had planned to do over the next 12 months. And just by having a business page, they had a 350% boost in profile traffic, which they didn't have before, on their Facebook page once they actually implemented their strategy. They doubled their interaction level with Facebook users, and their average volume of comments on posts that they made and likes on articles that they had written and so forth grew to about 72 a day, which was two times what they were getting before. So it was a really big success, and they continue to grow their Facebook presence. Some of the things that they tried to do was to think younger, because at the time when they started the real push towards promoting their Facebook page, the demographics still swung kind of young on Facebook. It's not really the case anymore. In fact, I just wrote a blog post the other day that said, unless you sell to babies or dead people, your target audience is on Facebook, because from the bare minimum age of, I don't remember what the bare minimum is on Facebook. Anybody?
I think it's 13.
13, I believe, yeah.
I'm sure nobody under 13 has a Facebook account out there.
Right, like my wife's cousins that are 11. And they're the ones who always play Farmville all day. So if you sell to anyone between the age of 13 and 65 or older, chances are they're on Facebook. They also realized that just your vanilla Facebook profile page or business page wasn't enough, and that they needed to offer more. So sending, you know, their visitors to just the wall of updates wasn't very effective. So they set up things like the helpful place tab and the local ad. So if you're in the Bradford area, for instance, where we are, you would see the most local ad to you. They also posted like spring tips and things, and a cool little app on Facebook that you could just type in one sentence for the summer to say, this summer I will maybe get the fence painted finally, and then I will enjoy reading comic books or whatever it is you like to do. So they were trying to focus the Facebook business on getting projects wrapped up so that you could move on with your life. And they actually were trying to reimage the Ace Hardware stores that way as well. So they really used Facebook a lot for that.
Donnie, I don't mean to interrupt you. Could you explain to the listener probably, what the difference is between a wall and a tab and kind of the functionality that you have with a Facebook tab, a custom Facebook tab?
Sure. So if you have a Facebook profile, like a personal profile, which you actually have to have in order to set up a business page, And if you read back through the series of posts that I've written, there's much more to explain on that. The wall would be your list of updates that you've done. So when you log into your personal account, for instance, and you see like all of the updates that your friends have made, that would be kind of like your wall. Or if somebody posted a message on your wall directly, you'd see a slew of updates. But a custom tab, which is what Ace used, was something that they actually developed. And one of their keys to success that they stated up front was that they were going to use professionals to do that, to do the actual development of a custom tab. So up at the top where you might see wall, info, photos, they had some tabs at the top that were offers, Ace rewards, helpful place, things like that, that they designed themselves. And they were much more colorful, had videos embedded in them, and they were just, they weren't as bland as the typical Facebook wall looks. It's not so black and white with a list of links. And there's actually tools in there to help. Another thing that they did that I thought was great was they had a regular weekly update. So every Friday, they would post something new in their spring guide. They would post, like, new tips for maintaining your garden, or maybe the best way to strip paint off of a deck. And they would do that at the same time every single Friday in spring. So people kind of grew to expect it, and they would check back for it. Then they kept a running list of all of their updates and all of their additions to that list on Facebook, so you could always go back and check. One thing I failed to mention with the I Will app that they developed, where you could say, I will finish waxing my floor or something, they always had a share this with your the rest of your friends on Facebook at the end of it, so that it kind of grew the viral effect. And along with that I Will app, they did some kind of cross-marketing on different platforms as well. So they did TV ads that ran with it. They did newspaper ads that ran with it. And it kind of made it one cohesive campaign, which was nice. As I already mentioned, they were adamant about making sure that if they didn't have the expertise in-house to actually develop nice-looking interactive tabs for their business page in Facebook, they were going to hire out to an agency or a small business to do that. And that's one of the things that, you know, as a service, we actually do provide. And it doesn't take much time to get something set up that is a little more interactive and effective for users on Facebook. So that was my first post. That took forever for me to explain.
That's okay. I think it was good. And I think some of the people out there, some of the small businesses probably think, well, I can just send people to my wall. It's not a big deal. I guess you have to kind of put yourself in the shoes of a user when they're reading a wall. If they come to your page and they don't quite like you yet, and they something catches their eye on the wall, they start reading down, they read the comments, they read a little bit further, then they see, you know, their friend Susie on there commented. So they click on Susie's profile, and then they see that Susie added a bunch of new pictures this week about her adventures in Cancun, so they start clicking through on those. After a while, they're 15 pages deep into Facebook, away from where they originally started on your Facebook wall. So that's one of the big things, is if you can get them somewhere else that gets them to like you prior to them getting distracted and doing 30 other things and getting too deep before they forget to even come back to you and get pulled away from their computer, you get that like before that.
I agree 100%. As I had mentioned, the next case study I did was actually on a smaller business, and they faced kind of an interesting challenge in that they're a brewery. They're the Belgium Brewing Company, and they make craft beers and so forth, but they don't actually make an India Pale Ale. And Josh should probably be able to speak to what that even is. I'm not a big beer fan, so I don't really know. But it's a huge market, and apparently it's a much hoppier beer. Would you concur?
Definitely, generally a hoppier beer.
So they didn't make.
You could just call it an IPA.
But they knew they wanted to get in the market of doing so because it was such a big growing market. So in order to do that, they used Facebook, but they also used a slew of other marketing approaches. And they realized that folks that are really into craft beers tend to support local craft beer makers. So they took their sales force and they kind of branded their sales force as beer rangers, your local beer ranger, and they made an app on Facebook where you could go on and look up who your local beer ranger is, and it would actually direct you to a sales associate's personal profile for you to get in touch with them and find out where you could buy their IPA. And then they also did some in-store marketing and so forth because they realized that most people that would buy their beer typically, if they were in the mood for an IPA, they would walk right by their their traditional offering because they're not typically an IPA provider. But using Facebook heavily, they were able to surpass their sales goals in the first 3 months. And they had beat what they had estimated for 6 months in 3 months by focusing heavily on using Facebook to drive people to Facebook and build the community and really brand this beer ranger guy who sells the IPA beer. And they really didn't have a huge investment into the Facebook app because they were able to repurpose something that they had already developed for their website. So it was kind of a nice way to get more money out of their investment, so more of a return. But they're a much smaller business than Ace Hardware is, and they saw great success with it. And they actually, by the end of this year, they hope to be the number two. They're on target to be the number two highest selling IPA in the U.S.
I think that's a great point. That they are much smaller than Ace Hardware, but it's also a very niche product, and there's not many people that drink craft brews. And I think the statistic, I forget what it is, but it's like less than 5% of the alcohol beer that's consumed in the United States is actually the craft market. And that's huge. Most of it's all your Anheuser-Busch, Budweiser stuff. So not only is it a small business in terms of revenue and size, the revenue is probably pretty significant now, but it's also a very niche product. Where everyone can go to Ace Hardware and find something that they need. A very small group of people drink craft brews. So, is that it for you for now?
That's it for me for now.
I think I'm up next. I talked about content management systems, or CMS, and I kind of approached that from the non-developer standpoint. I came into the company and have been doing, for the past 2+ years, the marketing end of things, so the search engine optimization, search engine marketing, that type of thing, and haven't gotten much into development. I've learned a lot of stuff with the HTML now, just because I have to know some of that stuff when working with some of our SEO clients. But I still think much more like a user and much more like a small business employee or owner. So I kind of wanted to touch on that and speak to a level of a small business owner of why they might be considering content management system, CMS, or maybe just give them that idea. So some of the things that I compared it to were comparing it to an open source content management system, meaning free. A couple of the ones that we run across often are Joomla and Drupal. People using those types of things to manage the content on their website. And I think the most common complaint that we get about that is just trying to understand and work with a complicated back end where you're working with modules and you have to update 15 different things. And once you actually do update it, it might not look the same as it does on the site that you did when you updated it in the back end. So it can be very confusing, very clunky, and those types of things. There are benefits to open source is that there's big community that supports that, and they're constantly doing updates and maybe releasing plugins for that. But at the same time, it's not custom developed for you and for what your needs are, and generally it's difficult to learn something like one of those complicated backends if you're not familiar with that type of stuff. So because I'm most familiar with our content management system, I kind of, focused the post on that. I know the most about it. I've worked with a couple other ones, but I think I mentioned in there that it is our blog, and most of the time we don't try to sell, but sometimes we can try to sell our stuff, so this was a good chance that we could talk about it and share some opinions on content management systems. So the first one, and I think most importantly for me, is the benefit that you have from an SEO perspective. At least with ours, you have the opportunity to adjust and change some of those low-hanging fruit SEO elements like the page title or file name. They can be one of the easiest things to change that might affect your rankings, whether it's a little bit or a lot. And your meta description, which is more for a click-through rate, meaning someone sees your listing on Google and then they read what you have to say. They say, oh, that's a great call to action there. I better go click on that site. And I think most people probably say that out loud before they go click on the listing. But you do have the ability to update some of that. And then even more so is you can manage your content more. Create content more, create pages on the fly as you think of them. And I think one of the things that you'll see that we stress to our readers and our clients is that you just have to keep creating content, create content that people want to read, not necessarily just to create words and words, but stuff that's useful to your reader and user. And having an SEO, or having a content management system without having to call someone to update and add a new page, add some more content, more easily allows you to do that, and while you're thinking of it, you can add that. It's very similar to blogging, where you can easily go in there and write a blog post. You could do the same things with the content management system, and even choose custom templates. So if you want a template that has three columns in it, you can easily just say, I want to create a new page using this color scheme with a three-column template in there, and then you adjust each column's content without getting, I guess, too much into it without a visual. The reuse of content with ours is very easy, so you can add a piece of content and then reuse that within the site without having to recreate that. The example that I used, and probably the easiest to understand and reuse of content across your site, would be like a navigation bar, where that is editable content that you can change and say, I wanted to say this, and then maybe you change your product line and everything changes, so you need to change that across the site. You change that in one place, and then every place that uses that navigation bar would change across the site. So that's one of the nice benefits there. And then it also saves your content. So if I create a piece on, how morning basketball was for us, if you don't know, we play morning basketball. So if you ever want to join, just let us know. But if I create a post on or create a piece of content on how great morning basketball was and I stopped playing basketball for a while and I'm like, well, you know, I don't want people to think that I'm playing basketball, so I better take it away from my site. I can just kind of hide that content and then I start playing basketball again and I can say, oh, I better show this content again because I'm playing basketball again and I want more people to show up. So you don't have to go back there and recreate the content. When you do recycle that, you can adjust for the time. So if your industry has changed or your products have changed, it's not like you have to use that original content. You can adjust when you choose to reuse that. Backups. One thing is with our content management system, you're running on a database that's constantly being backed up. If you have a static site, your hosting provider should be backing up your stuff as well, because it's you know, could be just as detrimental to lose a smaller static site as a database site. It'd be much harder to rebuild a database site, but you're definitely ensured that you have pretty quality backups, whether you're having a database with us or another hosting provider. Generally, you'll see that that's a more common occurrence when it's a database-driven site. We get a lot of people lately that are coming to us and switching from a non-content management system site to a content management system site because of the shared responsibility aspect of that. So I can say that Larry down in quality control updates the quality control content, while Jason over in manufacturing updates the manufacturing content, because each of those knows they're part of the job or they're part of the industry, they're part of the company better than the other people. They're working in it every day and they're probably more passionate about it. And it takes a little bit off of, you know, a certain person's plate. If you have an IT department that's updating your website, generally IT departments and IT people are spread a little thin, and oftentimes they don't make it to the website updating that you asked them to because a server goes down or a computer goes down. So that shared responsibility is one of the big benefits. And you know, I think one of the biggest questions is how easy is this to use? How easy can Jason over in manufacturing use this? He can barely even turn on his computer. Well, I came into the company with no development background whatsoever, and I was able to pick up on that version of the content management system at the time very easily, just because it's so similar to like updating Word. You add pictures the same way. There's just one extra step of uploading it to a server, but as far as that, your editor looks the same, and it's a what you see is what you get, or WYSIWYG editor. So when you edit your content in there, it actually looks how it's going to look when you publish it. So you're not working with a back end. You actually browse the site like a user, and you say, well, there's a spelling mistake there. I should click on the edit button and update that. So I guess to be as brief as I can, without being too confusing, that's, I guess, my personal opinion on benefits and kind of the benefits that we hear from clients that are using a content management system, or not even clients, just people that we talk to that are using various content management systems. I don't know if you guys have anything to add. That
one thing I would mention, not to belate the topic too long here, is that we have been using WordPress, which a lot of people think of as a blogging platform, but for our nonprofits especially, we can reformat that to be a content management system for a little bit cheaper, and it works really great. So we've implemented that a couple times.
Yeah, it's certainly, WordPress is certainly a great solution for folks that are on a really, really tight budget and need to be able to edit things, but really don't need like the sophistication of a business website. And I agree with Josh 100%. I think probably if I had to pick one element of the content management system that kind of differentiates it from a lot of the open source options, as well as other pay options, is that the ability to manage the site happens right on the page that you're trying to work with. So if you're on the About Us page and you decide you want to plug in some new photos or update the history or change the board of directors, you browse to the About Us page just like a normal user would and click an edit button. And the content right on the page becomes editable, so you don't have to browse and find that page in some back-end system to do the updates. Through the WYSIWYG editor, we can also provide little templates for within the editor. So if you commonly use like a stack of six thumbnails with little descriptions to the right of them, we can create those custom templates for you. And you just click a button and it automatically plugs all those types of things in, which is pretty cool.
I think, as I mentioned, this was our first podcast, and our goal is to keep it at a half an hour, but it looks like, you know, we've had a lot of great topics this week, so I think we can extend and just go as long as it takes, and you might find out that our podcast will be our weekly one-hour podcast instead of our weekly half-hour podcast.
We'll also do a good job of leaving some notes, so maybe if there's one particular topic that you want to hear about, we'll have that listed when we post the podcast, so you can skip to that one part. But with that said, I think I'm going to jump in and talk about my post. My first one this week was about a service called Ping FM, and you can take a look at that. It's completely free at ping.fm. And we talk a lot about Twitter and Facebook because those are the big dogs when it comes to social networking. But there are a lot of other sites that maybe haven't just taken off as well as Facebook or Twitter, but also have an active community of members that are sharing information and consuming content. So you might be already struggling with Twitter and Facebook, just keeping up with those two. So what Ping FM does is provide a really great service that you can actually post to multiple services at once. So say you have an update that you want to send out to Twitter, maybe a new blog post, you can actually send that through Ping FM, and it will update multiple sites at once. So you can update sites like Tumblr, FriendFeed, and Google's Buzz all at once without having to go to every single site and update individually. Maybe I'll just touch on some of these. Tumblr is really cool because it's a blogging platform similar to WordPress, except for the idea is to tumble a blog, which means you just share it to your social network. So say if Josh were to post something to his Tumblr blog, I could tumble it, and everyone who was following me would be able to see what he posted. It kind of like reposts it to your own blog. Buzz is a Twitter alternative, which was made by Google. Hasn't really taken off as well as Twitter, but it has a small following. And FriendFeed is also a social networking website where you can communicate, post information, and people can follow up, similar to Twitter. But like I said, there's a ton of services at Ping FM that you can sign up to use. I mentioned in the blog post that the hardest part about using Ping FM is going to every single services website to create an account there. But the cool thing about that is most websites have Facebook Connect, or you can use your Twitter account to log in. That way you don't have to manage 20 different accounts, and I really like it. I heard about that through Gary Vaynerchuk's book called Crush It, and there's a chapter devoted to maybe being more of a big fish in a small pond with some of these smaller social networks rather than a small fish in a big pond with Facebook and Twitter. So that was kind of how I took that post.
That's a good point, Dave. Do you have a Tumblr account yourself?
I do. If you look up DM Chemic on Tumblr, in fact, on any of the services that I mentioned in the blog post, I even use Plurk, which was a small social network for a little while, Tumblr, Buzz, FriendFeed, I'm on all of them. So feel free to friend me, and I'll send you a note.
Dave has unlimited friends on these. He'll
accept
your request.
That's right.
Well, I think I had the next batch of posts on the blog this week, and I'm going to kind of take all three of the mobile posts that I did and kind of merge them into one update here. We're doing a lot of marketing in the mobile arena these days, so whether it's using 2D barcodes, QR codes to integrate print and traditional advertising with the web, or just doing a custom experience on a mobile device, you know, mobile is kind of it right now. It's grown, and there's actually, you know, a zillion more cell phones and mobile users in the world than there are desktop PC users in the world. That's an actual statistic, that there's a zillion more.
What's the stat that, like, 80% of statistics are made up on the
79%.
Okay.
79%.
I thought it was something around there.
Yep. So I started a series of which I've gotten three posts done in on mobile marketing for your small business. And the first two were really focused on just kind of differentiating between the categories of mobile devices. So we look at what we call dumb phones, and the industry calls dumb phones, feature phones, smartphones, and then tablets. And tablets are kind of a newer beast in the mobile arena. They're not really new, but they've grown in popularity. So when we talk about dumb phones, Jitterbug, you know, think about the phone for your grandparents that has, like, just numbers on it, and you probably don't even have voicemail. That's a dumb phone. And I say later on in the in one of my other posts that from a marketing standpoint, unless you're really trying to cold call people, and they are in the age range of, like, 50 to 75 or 100, we tend to exclude dumb phones from our marketing.
But who doesn't love cold calling?
Right. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, and we all enjoy being interrupted at church when we forgot to turn our ringer off with some offer. So we're going to ignore them for the time being unless they have some huge resurgence in popularity. Feature phones are they are the most common phone right now, though there's some data to support the fact that smartphones are going to overtake that by the end of this year. But they are you see them all over the place. A lot of them will have a touch screen, and they've got some basic features. The vast majority of them don't have the ability to install new apps on them. You can text message with them. Some of them do support mobile web, but they almost always have really basic web browsers that aren't robust and aren't going to view like your typical website very well. But they are the most common phone right now. And then the next grade is smartphones, which Nielsen actually just put out a report near the end of last year that said that they are estimating by the end of 2011, smartphones will actually outnumber feature phones. And in some of the data that I think plays into that is that a lot of the cell companies are going to start forcing feature phone users to actually have a data plan as well, which is what has kept a lot of people away from smartphones is, do I want to pay that minimum extra $10 a month to use 25 meg of data or something, or pay a huge $30 a month for unlimited data? Well, if feature phone users are going to have to start paying that data fee, why wouldn't you just jump up to a much more powerful platform like a BlackBerry or an Android phone or an iPhone versus having an LG chocolate something that's kind of a half butted smartphone.
So I think we talked about this, the data plan, a little bit when Donnie had posted this and kind of agreed that the Protocol 80 guys would probably run through the 25 meg in about 15 minutes on the first day of the month. So you have to keep that into consideration. It's easy to use that data.
Yeah, and smartphones are constantly checking the web for updated emails that have come in or text messages, or if you have RSS readers on your phone, they're always pinging the sites that have feeds to update that. Weather, they use a heck of a lot more data than you're actively using, you know, yourself. So it's not like just browsing the web. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that uses data as well. So looking at those categories, along with tablets like the iPad and the Samsung offerings that are under Android, and I think BlackBerry has one now called Playbook or something,
yep.
The tablet form factor is essentially a beefed-up smartphone, really, because if you take the iPad, aside from the dimensions, some of the power of it, there's not a whole lot of difference between that and an iPhone, aside from the actual dimensions of it. So I kind of just clump tablets in with smartphones. Just they have a bigger display, and you can do more with them because there's more real estate. So what does that mean from a marketing standpoint? If I were to, as a small business, if I were making an investment now in mobile, realizing I probably can't afford to hit everybody, I can't have a tablet experience, a smartphone experience, a feature phone experience, I would certainly pick a smartphone experience at this point because there's way more smartphones than there are tablets, and the smartphone user experience will work well on a tablet anyways. So I guess from a marketing standpoint, if I had to pick one, it would certainly be smartphones, and some of the options I would look at doing would be have a mobile-optimized version of my website, and if you're using a content management system like ours, you can do things like flag pages as being mobily accessible so that a mobile-friendly version is generated as well. Using QR codes, text message campaigns, these are all things that you can do under the smartphone umbrella. Apps are certainly a huge deal. All of the major smartphone manufacturers or the OS manufacturers have like an App World or the iTunes App Store, the Android market. You can download custom apps for your specific smartphone, and you can advertise within those. You can also do HTML5-based web applications that work and feel very much like a native application. So haven't really gotten very far into the mobile marketing for your small business series, but that's kind of where I'm at now. And my last post, as I mentioned, was basically how do I decide which platform to focus on. And from a small business standpoint, I would certainly choose smartphones, and the Nielsen data really supports that, with smartphones supposed to be outnumbering feature phones by the end of the year.
I think Donnie and I had just a brief discussion on the way to a meeting about text messaging campaigns and how, you know, they were, I guess, talked about for a while, but then it seems like they just got left in the dust by all the power that these smartphones have. And I guess the beauty of an application or a in-depth mobile marketing strategy versus just sending a text to someone.
And I think something else that has played into it is that it's complicated. It's not something that most businesses can set up and do on their own. You have to go through a service in most cases to be able to send out like mass text messages and have text messaging campaigns and things. And it tends to be more expensive than email marketing, at least from our experience. And some of that may be because of the volume, because we work with small businesses, so they're not looking to send like hundreds of thousands of text messages.
And I think people that actually opt in to receive text messaging campaigns are following big brands. So as a small business, you're probably going to have a lot harder of a time getting people to actually opt in for your text messaging campaign.
Right. I think maybe another challenge with text messaging is, at least for me personally, it's much more of a personal thing. It's not like my email inbox where I'm expecting a bunch of offers and
right.
so forth. With text messaging, I'm expecting to hear from somebody I want to hear from
right.
versus advertising messages. In fact, when I get my free messages from Verizon, I'm always like, what the heck is this garbage? So maybe texting is while it can be effective in some arenas, and we've seen cases where it has been, it's not always or very rarely is it the best solution for a small business.
All right, I think I'm back up.
I
had an easy post yesterday. On Wednesday night, we had hosted a business after hours at Tortuga's Restaurant in Bradford. We We sponsored with Protocol, or we sponsored with Tortuga's Restaurant and Benefit Concepts out of Williamsville, New York, and Tortuga's is on Main Street in Bradford. If you frequent Tortuga's, if you're ever there, there's a good chance that you're probably going to see one of the Protocol 80 guys eating something. We frequent there often. So it was a great time. We had to want to thank the Chamber for all their help in getting everything together, and Ron at the Chamber for helping us out with that, and also thank the other sponsors, Tortuga's and Benefit Concepts, for making it a huge success, and then finally the attendees. We had about 80 attendees, which is excellent. I think we were close to one of the records for Bradford. We didn't come close to last year's Glendorn record of like 120, but we were expecting 50 to 75 people, and we got about around 80, so we were really happy with that. We went through 15 pitchers of margaritas and quite a bit of food. There were a lot of jalapeno poppers left over, and Donnie had the idea of a jalapeno popper eating contest. It didn't go over. I guess we were a little concerned with how that might end.
I just ended up competing with myself and had as many as I could possibly down, and it went. I won.
He did a great job. He did a great job. I think we would love to think that everyone came just to talk to us and the other sponsors, because that would be fabulous. But we did do a giveaway with the other sponsors of two Wi-Fi Kindles, so that's probably what helped our attendance. Justin Parks of the Olean Times Herald and Best Offers, a new thing that's going to be coming out in the future, so keep your ears open for that. Won one of the Kindles. He felt really bad for winning. I don't know why. I think it's because he never wins anything, and he had a little bit of guilt over actually getting his name pulled. Tim Roth of
CareerLink,
PA CareerLink. So good job to those guys. You didn't really have to do anything but stick your card in a sombrero, but I hope you're enjoying the Kindles. There's a video of the drawing right on our blog and on Facebook, so check that out. There's some nice music that goes along to that. That wasn't the actual music that was playing there, but we were able to toss them over. So that's it. We had a great turnout. We really enjoyed it, and we hope to do something like that again in the future, and we'll be attending the other after hours here.
Okay. In my post, you might notice like a theme. I kind of like to find free services that make working with Twitter or working with Facebook a little bit easier. And this one was kind of a fun one. When I first started using Twitter, one of the things I struggled with was trying to force a complete thought, especially when you're trying to insert a link into 140 characters, which is the limit on Twitter. And so I just searched around and found a couple services that can help out with that if you're new. The first one is called Thesaurus, but it's not spelled like the traditional word thesaurus. It's actually THSRS, so a little bit of shorthand there like we like to see on the internet. And what that will do is, traditionally, a thesaurus will give you words that are like a certain word, but in this case, it will actually replace your word with a shorter word, so you can save a couple characters if you're using that to repost to Twitter. The other one that I really liked was called 140it, and in that case, if you're at twitter.com and you put in a tweet that's too long, you can actually use a browser plugin that will shorten the tweet automatically by doing things like shortening links or inserting shorthand. So if you say anyone, it will change the full word to any and then the number one. And it will also change companies' names to their stock symbol. So things like that. And the last one, I think, was called Twinslator, which will actually translate a tweet when you send it out. If you have international clients, it will actually post both the native language tweet and the foreign language tweet in one go. So that was kind of a fun post that I posted, and I hope you liked it.
Do you think there's any services out there for maybe parents that get, like, crazy text messages from their kids that use all these shortened things so they can actually understand it? I know I don't do much of the LOLing and stuff like that, but that might be a helpful service for some parents out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I did see one. I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to come back, maybe do a blog post on that next week. But I'm also not a huge fan of the internet shorthand, but I know that can be confusing to a lot of people. So
WTF, homies.
It's changing the way the youngsters out there are talking and writing. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the future with that kind of thing in actual writing. And
yeah,
seeing if they're using it in their school papers and stuff like that. It becomes habit, I guess.
So I think that's it. That's all of our blog posts. We'll just wrap it up here. Just to keep in mind, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/protocol80. That's protocol and the numbers 80. Twitter.com/protocol80 as well. You can follow us there and send us an at reply. We're hoping to have this published to iTunes, so we'll be able to supply a subscription link so you can follow us week to week in the future. And of course, you can follow our blog at blog.protocol80.com. Leave a comment. If you have any ideas for things you would like us to hear us talk about, please let us know, and we'd be happy to do that. Anything else, guys?
We were going to just, I guess, briefly talk about last-minute news that maybe we get a chance to blog about.
I jumped the gun.
I think the biggest thing for the week was Larry Page taking over as CEO of Google over Eric Schmidt. You guys have any thoughts on that?
It sounded to me, from what I had heard, that it was kind of a welcome change by both of them, in that maybe Schmidt was better with dealing with like the external factors of Google, legalities, product launches, like the actual launch end of it. So, you know, I don't. The way it was promoted was, it's not like a shakeup in terms of who's running Google. It's more of a evolution of a relationship between, you know, the two founders and Eric Schmidt from the beginning for a decade, and they're just. Schmidt basically said it's his time. You know, he thinks he's ready now. So, my opinion is it won't. If anything, it will make things better. Hopefully, a year from now, I don't have my foot in my mouth, but I don't see it as a negative. I see it as a positive.
I think one of the other things was Starbucks accepting mobile payments nationally. I don't know if that was this week or late last week, but that's pretty big. So you can pay. I think, Donnie, you might have read a little bit about that.
Yeah, you can basically go and use your rewards card through an app on your phone to pay. So you're right there getting a coffee, and you can actually pay. And I think you might be able to pre-order as well, but I might be making that up.
It's okay. They'll do it if you're making it up.
I did notice, though, that there isn't I don't think that there's an app for Android for it yet, which we're all Android users, so that's kind of disappointing.
And you had
I heard on Twitter, or I saw on Twitter, that Facebook broke the 600 million registered users mark this week, which is twice the population of the United States. So you would need everybody in the United States to sign up twice to have as many Facebook users as there are as of this week. So
that's crazy.
It's pretty
mind-boggling.
It is. They should have a Facebook census.
Remember, if you take any quote away from this podcast, it is, if you sell dead people babies, then you don't have to worry about Facebook. But anyone in between, you better be there.
That's right.